This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. He's got another hat on this week. Yep, not only is he a player, but he's even gone to a director's seminar. How was it?
Well, I wasn't there as a director. I was there in another capacity, Mariana.
Oh, what's that?
They needed somebody to be chairman of the first session. And
chairman,
I stayed all day. And
it wasn't of the first session?
Well, that was for the morning session. And I ended up staying all day. And it wasn't just because they had pizza for lunch. So Waikato Bay's regional committee had a seminar for directors. I think there were probably about 50 people there.
Nice.
Just people that direct around the Waikato Bay's 23 clubs. Mm-hmm. And they're not all qualified directors by any stretch of the imagination. They came up with some interesting stats, actually. So there's just over 2,000 players in the Waikato Bay's region. That's not such an interesting stat. And there are 108 people that direct.
Okay.
That sounds like quite a few, really, doesn't it?
Hmm.
But of those 108 people, I think it was something like only 29 of them are accredited directors, you know, that have got a club director's
certification. Yeah.
Something like that. So a lot of people just do it, you know, for love because they need somebody. Some clubs have only got one director or maybe two.
Yeah. And did they have any people attending that were looking at becoming directors, new to the game?
Well, I'm not 100% sure about that. You know, the people who spoke were all, who asked questions or participated, were all directors. I believe most of them were probably people who were already directing in some form or another.
Okay, yeah.
But some of them had only been directing like for a very short time, were quite inexperienced, and you know, they wanted a bit of support and that sort of thing. So it sounds like mostly the response was positive. I did get an email from Hugh McAllister, who was, you know, he had a lot to do with the organisation of it, and he's on the Waikato Bay's committee. He says they've so far received only positive comments and compliments about Directors Forum.
Good.
Yeah. Alan Joseph was there. He had come up the previous day to direct the 5A teams event in Te Araha, and they had him talking about things like mistaken explanations and director's manner and all that sort of thing. It was very interactive. You got questions from the floor. Some things went a little bit over time because of that, but a couple of things luckily went under time, so finished pretty well.
Okay. So did they actually find out why we're not getting that follow through with new directors through? Did they have any ideas why the numbers aren't growing?
Well, the numbers are actually looking pretty good. I mean, 108 directors out of 2,004 players. I mean, that's not a bad sort of a, you know, that sounds quite good, doesn't it?
Okay.
You know, maybe the problem's not as big as you might think. Obviously, some clubs are really struggling for directors. One lady got up and spoke about how they don't have any accredited directors in their club and what they're doing about it or what they'd like to do about it, how they'd like more people to qualify. And one of the things that Alan Joseph said was that, look, ideally, you'll know all the rules, you'll know this, you know all that. And I know when we were speaking to Judge Julie, but he said, in reality, you don't actually have to know all of those things to be a good director. You know, you have a rule book. As long as you can set up the room and get it going, and if you have a good manner and you speak nicely to people and they enjoy their night, you'll probably be quite successful as a director, even if you don't know everything that you'd like to.
Mm. Oh, that sounds positive. That's really good.
Yeah, I think it went pretty well. So, and it was probably a good chance. And the directors don't get that many opportunities to meet and network with each other.
Mm. Tell me, was every club represented? Or
no,
most?
There was nobody from Hamilton.
You were there?
No.
You don't count.
Most clubs were represented. Yeah, Hamilton wasn't there.
Yeah, well, sorry, I was away.
You didn't have to be there, but there were no directors there from Hamilton. Yeah.
Well, we'll need to change that.
Well, you did ask, so I've told you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably didn't want to hear the answer to that question, but there were people from Tauranga, Rotorua, Morrinsville, Huntly, Te Awamutu, all around the place.
Good. That's something that I'll have to do. So what is the follow-up from this forum? Or is there?
We'll have to wait and see what they're doing. Hugh said they would like a possibility to promote directors, and he would be more than happy to come on this radio podcast to help do that.
Oh, good.
Look, I guess a lot of directors are going to be in contact with each other, and what they'll come up with exactly, I don't know. I was only there in a very minimal role.
So as chairman of the first session, what did you actually have to do?
Not much. I had to make sure that the speakers kept to time, and I had to make sure that questions didn't go on too long. You know, just the normal sort of stuff when you chair a meeting.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, that sounds great.
Hey, I didn't have to make the coffee.
Okay. Now, I know we're talking about unauthorized information with Judge Julie, but what sort of types is unauthorized information? You know, is hesitation unauthorized information? A bid out of turn's unauthorized information? Is insufficient bidding unauthorized information?
Yes. I'm not a director, but yeah, that is one of the... Actually, this came up at the forum.
Oh, did it?
So yeah, they talked about what was authorised and what wasn't. And yeah, I'd say that an insufficient bid that wasn't accepted would be unauthorised.
And you know, enough,
it's actually authorised to the opponents.
Yeah.
They're allowed to know about it, but the partner of the person who did it isn't.
And tell me about when your opponents hold their cards quite low, because sometimes opponents do. They put their cards down really low and you have to tap them on the hand and get them to bring their cards up a bit. Is it ethical to tap them on and say, hey, look, hold your cards back, or you just let them hold them low and you have a good gander at them? What do you reckon?
Well, look, they can show you their whole hand if they want. There's no law against it.
It seems weird, doesn't it?
Well, I'm sure they don't do it intentionally, but in reality, people want to hold their cards whoever they like. If you can see them, well, as long as you're not deliberately trying to look at their cards, if they want to show you their hand, they can. You don't strike too many people that want to show you their hand, but, you know, maybe one day it'll happen.
Now, I haven't been on Bridge Winners lately. Have you? Is there anything exciting that's happening on there?
Actually, I thought there was something quite amusing on Bridge Winners, which I did read about the other day. They're talking about the ACBL, so it's the American Contract Bridge League. And this person said, given that the ACBL hates to lose money, which may explain to a degree their penchant for handing out light sentences for those caught cheating during online play, I have an idea that may mitigate some of the financial loss. Why not host on BBO a new event called Players Not in Good Standing Pairs? For those that don't know, players not in good standing are players that have been basically caught cheating or confessed or whatever. You know, they list them, their names are published. Qualifications are simple. You must currently be a member not in good standing because you were caught, you know.
Yeah.
Seat will be based on how many times you have repeated the phrase, I am an honest and moral person and am so embarrassed. This is not who I am in your hearing review. So this is the conditions of contest. Cell phone usage is encouraged, as is texting. Partners are welcome to sit side by side at two different computers in the same room. Self-kibitzing is required. No convention cards are necessary. No disclosure of lead agreements nor signaling methods need appear on the screen. What do you think?
What a hoot. I betcha even people that don't meet that criteria will want to play that. Do you think? Of course it would. It'd be funny. There'll be kibitzes galore. It'll crash because everybody will be kibitzing it. That would be so funny.
So there's somebody talking on Bridge Winners about the book that you've been reading, Bridge A Love Story by Zia.
What'd they say?
Plenty of wine, woman, and song, or plenty of bridge hands, including a significant number of bad hands with Zia's recommendations of actions that can be taken to sow confusion in the enemy's camp.
I told you. You said, oh, I didn't like that. I would like partner to tell the truth.
No, I'm just saying that part where he said it was a good idea to lie to partner,
yeah,
I didn't was. I don't think that's going to work out so well a lot of the time.
Well, where did you see that, Barry?
Called But the Patient Died.
What's the funniest thing you've heard recently at the bridge table? That someone's gone and made a rather large comment.
Made a rather large what?
Comment. So I'll read it out to you. One evening in a club game, my partner was the late Jeff Miller, the person I usually played with when I drove the 40 miles from Ripon to Appleton to play in a club game, started against Dennis and his partner. the late Dennis Crowell, known for his eccentric bidding. So Dennis Crowell and his partner, on the first hand, we violated club game tactics and bid a grand slam on a fit. The play had to be timed carefully, but Jeff surmounted that hurdle. Dennis decided to recoup his zero on the second board. Instead, he recouped a minus 800. On to round two, flushed with success, we bid another grand. It also wasn't a trick one claimer, but again, Jeff was equal to the task. But wait, there seems to be some confusion. Apparently, the movement had not been set up properly. The solution was to start over, at which point Dennis stood up and said, "There is a God."
I see.
There was a female member of the club whom I will refer to simply as the heroine of the second hand. She had an uncanny knack of irritating Jeff.
There's quite an old story on Bridge Winners at the moment. It's by Rhoda Walsh, who writes excellent, really funny articles. I don't know how much they teach you, but they are really funny. And this particular one was where people were defending this hand. His partner had misdefended, in his opinion. Anyway, this guy's name was Paul, was frustrated beyond control. Declarer won dummies, ace of spades, and proudly claimed making three. He was frustrated beyond belief at the way that the defense had gone. So he tore all of his remaining cards in half and threw them on the floor. One of his opponents called the director. Paul's explanation made bridge history. He said, "I'm sorry, the cards just slipped out of my hand, fell on the floor and broke."
And broke. How cool is that?
Rhoda Walsh, she writes some really funny stuff. This is back in 1957 this happened, by the way.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to talk about misused conventions. Number three on my list of most misused conventions is two clubs game force opening, or strong two clubs. So what's misused about this is I feel like people use it too much. They feel like, for example, let's look at a hand that would have 16 high card points and a 6-5 shape or something like that, where you really, really want to be playing in game. Now, I still won't open this two clubs for a couple of reasons. Firstly, if we open it at the one level, if we open just one of our long suit, this never gets passed out if we have a distributional 15, 16, 17 count. Like, seriously distributional, that wants to play game opposite 0 to 5 points. So if you open at the one level, the auction will never get passed out because the opponents have too many points to let you not play it. And if you're that distributional, other people will be that distributional. So yes, you might want to play in game regardless, but it doesn't mean that you have to open two clubs because the auction won't get passed out, and it helps your partner identify what sort of hand shape you actually have when you open it at the one level, and sort of what sort of point count you've actually got as well. If you open two clubs and you're just a really distributional hand, the opponents might get in there and have an auction like 2 spades past 4 spades. And now you haven't described any of your suits at all yet, which is a big issue if you have a very distributional hand. So if you have like intermediate strength distributional hand that wants to play game, open one of your suit, you can then compete, and your partner's better suited opening hands like this, one at the one level, rather than opening at two clubs, because your partner will be doubling contracts more, or they'll be trying to bid slams more. Whereas if you open it at the one level, you'll be able to round out your shape and still get to game regardless. If you open two clubs, your partner is in a worse spot. You'll have to be doubling the opponents a lot more, or your partner will be doubling the opponents a lot more because you wouldn't have been able to describe your suits. And you, because you're distributional, the opponents are more likely to be distributional, and it's really awkward. So two clubs gets opened too much, and I find that's really awkward to try and solve. So this one I put in number three in my most misused conventions, just for the frequency of what when it's opened. I'm a very conservative two club opener. I really don't want to try and stretch to put hands into it. And other things that I'll look for is if I plan to bid three minor, So if I've got an unbalanced hand with a minor, this is a really ugly way to start the auction, especially if you've got like a two suited hand with say like five clubs and a four card major. You will very often miss your four card major because your partner's really under the pump to try and describe their hand, and the auction sort of escalated too high. So putting two suited hands into this is also really awkward. So two clubs is overused. When opening at the one level would be a very practical bid. The auctions almost never get passed out at the one level if you have a pretty distributional hand. So number three on my list was the game forcing two club opening. Number two is Michael's Q-Bids. So Michael's Q-Bids, which is bidding the opponent's suit. So one heart, two hearts. So how is Michael's Q-Bids actually misused? Is sometimes I see people use this on 5-4 distributions, which I loathe. I don't want to get into the auction using Michael's Q-Bids with 5-4s. It's really hard for your partner to respond, and just overcalling a suit will be more than enough to try and do that. There are conventions that can be used on 5-4 shapes if you really want to, but Michael's Q-Bid, I dislike doing it. It escalates the auction very high, and one of the benefits is your partner knows that with a 5-5 shape, they can bid a lot more aggressively and respond appropriately to it. So one way that I see people misusing Michael's Q-Bids is doing it on 5-4 shapes, which I really don't like. Another way I see it is people trying to bid Michael's when it's really not. So let's look at a couple of examples of this. You might go a multi two diamonds and you bid three diamonds. Two diamonds says nothing about diamonds, so three diamonds should not be a Michael's Q-Bid. Another example is, let's say the people are playing precision and you bid two clubs. One club precision says nothing about clubs, so two clubs should be natural. So if the opponents open an artificial bid that says nothing about the suit, then bidding, raising that artificial bid is not a Michael's Q-Bid. Another way that it's misused is one heart, double pass, two hearts. This is not a Michael's Q-Bid either. Michael's Q-Bids only apply when it's the first action other than pass for your side to bid. Your partner has made a double, this is not a Michael's Q-Bid here. So bidding the opponent's suit has lots of other meanings in different spots, and it's not always Michael's Q-Bid. So this is another issue that I see with Michael's Q-Bids, is people's recognition of when it actually applies. And then the final way that I see it misused is people not knowing how to respond properly to a Michael's Q-Bid. So when your partner shows a 5-5 shape, if you've got really good fits, you don't need that many points before you need to jump. Most people just try and bid the suit at the lowest level, which I disagree with, where if I've got a good fit, if I've got four card support and like a singleton in what I think is their other suit, then I'll give game a shot. It doesn't really matter how many points I've got. I could have 5 points. These big distributional, well-fitting hands, I think it's really worth trying to push towards game. So my final reason of why Michael's is in my top five misused convention is people don't actually know how to respond to it either.
I do remember, along the sentiments of what Dennis stood up and said, there is a God. I do remember Nigella and I, and we travelled to Tauranga Bridge Club. We were playing Swiss Pairs. This is a few years back now. And we just happened to draw your table. Do you remember that? And we go over and we sit to play against you and Jenny. And then something happened with the scoring. And they said, hang on, we have to restart again. And then we got shifted off to a different table because they completely reset. And I think Nigella and I high-fived each other and said, whoop, yep. You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
One question I was going to ask you about a tip. We've talked about it before, but I want to know about the last train check. What is that again?
It's when you're in a sequence where you're looking at slam.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe you've made a few Q-Bids or whatever and you're up to four diamonds. Mm. And the suit that you're playing in is spades and your partner's last bid is four diamonds. You don't really have a clear bid to make. The next bid up, four hearts, which is the last bid available, is what they call last train. It's the last bid available to say, I'm still interested. It doesn't really mean anything other than I'm still interested in Slam. And this is my last chance to make another try.
Okay.
So I don't play last train, but I understand that it's usually the last bid before the game in the trump suit. It's just the very last bit available and says, hey, I'm still interested. Have you got anything extra?
And if you do you bid that suit? What do you do?
Oh, hey, look, as I said, I don't play last train. I guess you can just sign off if you don't have anything extra.
Yeah.
If you have got anything extra, well, you can bid something else.
Right. Now tell me, give me some result. Let's go to Spartown teams. What happened
Okay.
there?
The Spartown teams had a pretty good turnout, 22 tables. It was won pretty convincingly. It was Jan Cormack, actually, who's been on the show. She was wearing her pink boots and her black tights. For anybody that's interested, I
Yep.
told her that I'd like a pair of those pink boots, and she said, well, you'd have to wear the black tights with them. The winner of the Spartown teams was Grant Jarvis, Jan Cormack, Ken Yule, and Mike Curry.
How nice.
Huge effort for by the second team, Gillian Corbett, Rebecca Osborne, Ellen Parks, and Graham Stern.
Well done.
It's also a Swiss Pairs event held on the same day. And that was won by Shirley Bain and Graham Young from Tauranga,
Oh.
from Luda Watts and Ellen Mace. Field of 18 pairs. Nelson Open Pairs, a 5A event. That was won by Morris Carter and Jim Jessop. Those guys have been wearing for a while, from Sita Monaghan and Ruth Ellison. Palmerston North had a restricted 8B tournament. So there's plenty of bridge going on around the country. And that one was won by Craig Killington and Heather Simpson from Lynn Muller and Justine Hart from the Taranaki.
You can. What else is there?
Paihia held an open Swiss pairs. That was a 5A. That one looks like it was won by Bill Humphrey and Charmaine Churches.
Good on, Bill. So, what's happening this weekend?
This weekend, not too much this weekend. There's a big weekend coming up the weekend after.
The Rotorua Open.
New Plymouth have got an 8B pairs.
What is coming up is the Hamilton Swiss Pairs. We've got a 5A Swiss Pairs held over 3 weeks. On Wednesday nights, it is face to face. Everybody's more than welcome to come in and play.
So on Matariki, which is a public holiday, of course, 28th of June, they've got a Swiss pairs, 5A Swiss pairs event. Starts at 10 o'clock, two sessions. And I've got a little bit of a vested interest here because it is a fundraiser for the New Zealand international teams.
Hey, by the way, Hamilton has their quiz night, which is our way of supporting our players. How are you going with your quiz teams?
I haven't got anybody.
Oh my God, you're useless. You need to get somebody. It's part of your commitment.
You're going to have me committed.
Yeah. Oh, and that too. Well,
So,
you better hurry. 21st, Friday the 21st.
that same weekend, the Matariki pairs is on the Friday. On the Saturday, of course, there's Wellington have got their regional teams is being held on the 29th. So that's a 10A event, and it is face to face. The weekend after that, the North Island pairs, they got 31 pairs entered so far, but it is a little way away yet.
Pretty good numbers.
Following week is the Hamilton 5A teams. Better give that a bit of a plug. That's on the 13th of July.
Well, that seems enough. Have you got a tip to close this out?
You know, when you open the bidding, say you open the bidding one out and they overcall two diamonds and it goes pass to you. And you've got to decide whether you should bid, what you should bid. And I've mentioned this before, but people still don't do it. The best bid, if you can manage it, just ask yourself what's going on here. If you've got a minimum hand, if you've just got open and you've got some 12 count or even 11 count, and you've opened a heart and it's gone two diamonds pass to you and you've only got one diamond, ask yourself that age-old question that I always say to ask yourself. And that question is, what the hell is going on? Quite
Yep.
often, I'd say more often than not, partner is sitting there with a whole lot of diamonds. And they're just praying that you're going to reopen with a double for takeout. Pass it. So when you're in that pass out seat, you open the bidding and they overcall and it comes pass, pass to you. You know, the first thing that you should think of, the first thing, and for some reason it often seems to be the last, but it should be the first thing you should be thinking of is, have I got more or less the right shape to double? If I double and partner bids one of the other suits, will I be okay? And if the answer is yes, I reckon double is far and away the best thing that you can reopen with. Much better. Partner doesn't want to hear you bid two hearts. They don't want to hear you bid two spades or three clubs or anything else. They just want you to double. That's what they're hanging out for. Remember, if partner's got a good hand with diamonds, it can't double for penalties because most people will play that for takeout.
It's takeout, yeah.
You have to double for them. Look after partner.
Right.
You know how I like to see blood all over the carpet. People going for 1100. It's all great fun.
Yeah, when it's not you.
When it's you, it's not quite such great fun, I'll grant you.
It does seem right. I think maybe they're too chicken.
I think, no, I actually don't believe that. I think most people, I don't know why, when they're thinking of bidding something, double doesn't seem to be very high on their list. Even in other sequences, when it goes one heart and they overcall two diamonds and you've actually got a takeout double with clubs and spades, people don't necessarily think about it. They don't double when they should. Double's a great bid. It's the most flexible bid. And one of the good things about doubling that I've mentioned on the show before is that if you don't know what to do, double. At least you'll probably get another chance at not knowing what to do next round.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll be back in Hamilton next week. That
So you're still in
seems,
Dunedin?
yeah. I haven't organised a game yet. I'm
You still
tell
haven't. You had strict instructions
Oh,
to
no.
arrange a game of bridge while you were down there. If you can't come home until you've organised one,
But
I don't
anyway,
want excuses. I want results.
blood on the floor,
Yep,
potentially.
that's right.
Okay, I'm going to try. All right. Sorry, listeners. Being away down south has caused us to have a swear word with Judge Geordie's segment this week. So here is our question that we are going to ask you in episode 303.
Okay, Julie, partner's away for it with the fairies as usual, opens out of turn, one art, one spade, whatever, and the next person doesn't accept it. What happens next? What restrictions are there on partner?
Well, thank you for that, and I'll see you back in Hamilton next week. And to everyone else, have a good week of bridge, and we'll see you at the table.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.